News Weekly is an ad-free listener-supported podcast made possible by listeners like you. Just go to patreon.com/Sammy Shah, that's S-A-M-I-S-H-A-H, to support the podcast. Top stories of the week. Kerr cops claims of racism. Also, it's elder abuse in the USA. And Biden helps Gaza. No, Ukraine. No, wait, it's Gaza? No, it's definitely Ukraine. You know what? It's definitely not Sudan. All that and more on Newsweek. Hello and welcome to News Weekly, where we punch the news in the headlines weekly. A true Aussie abroad news now. Australians have a complicated relationship with racism. On the one hand, obviously, all Australians are against racism. No one is pro-racism, except for the state of Queensland. I'm pretty sure that's their only economic output. But yes, as a multicultural society, Australians on the whole tend to agree that racism is bad. However, Australians also have a reputation for being racist, which many Australians will tell you is really unfair, and they're sick of all the Lebos, Curries, and of course Aborigines who keep bringing it up. There are much worse words for all of those groups, but I think you get the joke without me going there. The thing is, the one thing Australians aren't good at, which I think we can all agree on, is having a mature conversation about racism. Australians are about as equipped to talk about racism as a toddler is to talk about the environmental impact of pooping four times a day. Yes, you did a big poo-poo, but you've generated enough nappies to sink the Titanic. Yes, you're right. Reusable cloth nappies would be more environmentally sound, but the effort involved is more than my sleep-deprived brain can handle. Yes, you're right. I'll be a lot more sleep deprived when global warming gets worse. Okay, maybe that toddler is better equipped to talk about the environment than Australians are about racism. And that was made clear this week when Australian national treasure, captain of the Matildas, and Chelsea Football Club player Sam Kerr made the headlines.
News of the charge broke earlier this week when the 30-year-old appeared via video link in a London court. The alleged racially aggravated harassment charge relates to an incident with a police officer who was responding to a complaint over a taxi fare. Now, that incident happened in Twickenham more than a year ago in January 2023. The court documents allege that Kerr intended to cause the police officer PC Lavelle harassment, alarm or distress using abusive or insulting words or behaviour. Now, that is an allegation that Sam Kerr denies.
This then led to much speculation as to what the exact racially aggravated harassment could be. What did Sam Kerr say? And then, finally, tragically, the news broke.
We're learning more details today about this incident involving Sam Kerr and the moments leading up to it. British tabloid newspaper The Sun reports Matilda's captain called a police officer a stupid white bastard.
Despite scepticism that Kerr did say that on the grounds that any self-respecting Aussie would have said stupid white cunt and not stupid white bastard, this then led to much debate in Australian media as to whether or not calling someone white bastard qualifies as a racial slur, and given how much fun they all have saying it, it might be a clue as to what the answer to that question is.
Well, Matilda's soccer star Sam Kerr is this morning denying she called a police officer a stupid white bastard.
Stupid white bastard. Wayne, if someone was to call you a stupid white bastard, would you be offended?
Happens all the time.
Stupid white cop, not a stupid white bastard.
A stupid white bastard.
Stupid white bastard. Have you ever been called a stupid white bastard?
I think I've been called nearly everything.
I did not know white people loved calling each other stupid white bastards this much. Is this like when black people took back the N-word? Are whites owning white bastard now? Look, clearly calling someone a white bastard is a racial slur, obviously. But let's just agree, there are degrees of racial slurs, much like there are degrees of murder. The N-word is a first-degree murder, always carried out with intent and often premeditated, and you're probably fucked for life if you say it. Calling someone a brown or a curry or some of the words for Asian people or Jewish people, those can be second-degree murders. You'll still do it sometime, but it won't be a life sentence. With good behavior, in a few years, people will forget. White bastard? Let's call that equal to a misdemeanor assault. You were probably drunk at the time. The person you swung at probably started it, to be honest, and you'll have to pay a fine and move on. And if you're still on the fence over whether or not this was racist, here's Channel 9 interrupting people out for a run so they can give their most out-of-breath answers to the question, is white bastard racist?
Yeah, I do. I think it goes both ways.
Everyone gets called different things every day. Everyone's just taking it to heart. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Of course it's racist. Like, that's just a silly question, I think, personally. But if it's about Sam Kerr, I think everyone needs to back off her. She's an incredible sportswoman, an incredible athlete for our country, and they need to just drop it.
Wise words there from a real white bastard. All in all, though, you have to admit, going abroad, getting drunk and vomiting in a taxi, then racially abusing the local law enforcement, that's the most Australian thing Sam Kerr could ever do. State of the Disunion news now. It must be 2016, because there's a Deadpool movie coming out, a new Kung Fu Panda movie coming out, and America has the two oldest US presidential candidates in its history competing for the White House. The elder abuse spectacle that is the US elections is speeding forwards with all the momentum of a mobility scooter, which is what both candidates are likely to compete on. Maybe if America just got Biden and Trump to joust on mobility scooters, it would save everyone the time. The battle for who will wear adult diapers in the Oval Office is heating up, with 81-year-old Joe Biden facing off against the much sprightlier 77-year-old Donald Trump.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This is a big one. And they tell me, the pundits and otherwise, that there's never been one like this. There's never been anything so conclusive.
That's the voice of the youth right there. The thing is, according to polls, Biden's not looking so good. And I don't just mean physically, he also looks terrible physically, but I'm talking about electorally.
A recent poll conducted by the New York Times and Siena College shows that a majority of voters who supported Biden in the 2020 elections say he's too old to be an effective leader in a second term. His Republican rival, former President Donald Trump, though only a few years younger and also prone to confused statements, has fewer voters saying they're worried about his age.
The New York Times Siena College poll had the president 4 points behind his likely Republican opponent, Donald Trump, in the hypothetical matchup. Might not be hypothetical for too much longer. There were an additional 3 major surveys that also showed Trump leading amid broad and deep dissatisfaction with the incumbent.
Still, there's a chance. On Friday, Biden delivered his State of the Union. It was his opportunity to show the country and the world that he is in robust health and able to lead with vitality and energy.
On the freedom to vote, and have your vote counted. On the freedom of choice, the freedom to have a fair shot, the freedom from fear. Hamas ended this conflict by releasing hostages, laying down arms, could end it. By releasing the hostages, laying down arms, and surrendering those responsible for October 7th. But Israel has And my message to transgender Americans.
Why haven't the Democrats replaced President Hackenkoff? Here's political scientist and my former university professor, Larry Sabato, speaking with DW News.
He has spent his entire life trying to get to be president. And incredibly, at the age of 78, he made it. Do you seriously think that he would step aside willingly before the Constitution requires him to do so? If Democrats had an obvious, very popular nominee, then maybe there would be some pressure from the people who count on Biden to withdraw. Well, there isn't. and therefore there isn't.
So on one side, there's a Republican candidate who is notoriously deplorable and quite open about how batshit crazy his government will be if he wins. And on the other, a Democrat that no one likes, no one wants, but the party hasn't got any better options to go with. Hey, at least the new Deadpool movie looks pretty good.
Don't just stand there, you ape. Give me a hand up. No, I'm actually okay. Thank you very much.
Uber aid delivery news now. The Israel war on Gaza is, of course, continuing, still without any ceasefire deal being agreed upon. The problem with the deal is that Israel wants the release of the hostages and the complete surrender of Hamas, or it will continue to bomb Gaza. And Hamas wants Israel to keep continuing to bomb Gaza. I'm not kidding. Hamas chief Yahya Sinwar literally sent a message to exiled members of his terror group saying he would welcome an Israeli assault on Rafah because the high number of civilian casualties would intensify worldwide pressure on Israel, according to a report from the Wall Street Journal. So it turns out that the only thing no one on either side seems to care about is Gazans, of whom about 30,800 have now been confirmed as killed and thousands more are still uncounted under the rubble. Another crisis that's worsening is the food shortage, which has already resulted in malnutrition-related deaths.
Earlier this week, top UN officials warned a quarter of Gaza's population, more than a half million people, are near famine.
Meanwhile, Joe Biden has decided he cannot wait for Netanyahu to stop using Gazan civilians as human shields for his legal and political troubles, and will try to provide some aid himself.
We're going to join with our friends in Jordan and others in providing airdrops of additional food and supplies into Ukraine.
The White House later said the president misspoke and was referring to Gaza.
Airdropping food is what America has previously done in Iraq and Afghanistan during its wars there, thus continuing a long-held tradition of Uber Eatsing a population while simultaneously helping bomb it. America has also announced a plan to build a new port in Gaza to increase aid supply.
Now another shift. President Biden has ordered the American military to build a port down there, somewhere along Gaza's coastline. An announcement which raises more questions than answers.
I mean, the first question is, does he know it's Gaza or does he think it's Ukraine again?
His announcement, an acknowledgement that aid trucks are not getting into Gaza quickly enough.
Which raises the question of why aren't those aid trucks getting in quickly enough? What possibly could be impeding their progress, you, a reasonable person, might ask.
Scuffles erupt as Israeli activists try to block vital aid destined for Gaza. Police try to move the protesters on, but soon abandon their efforts and allow them to stay.
This is not the border with Gaza. We're actually a long way from it. Over there, behind that big gate, that's Egypt. But what happens here is that trucks filled with aid for Gaza come through the gate and go to an Israeli inspection station.
Trucks line up on the Egyptian side, unable to cross. The Israeli government says it's not imposing any restrictions on aid, blaming problems on poor UN distribution.
There are no limits, no limits on the amount of humanitarian aid that can enter the Gaza Strip.
But the World Food Programme says its first delivery to northern Gaza in more than 2 weeks was turned back by the Israeli Defence Force on Tuesday, with no explanation.
None of the people of Gaza, no one is innocent.
So far then, for Gazans, the only possible relief might be that they soon won't be the top hunger crisis in the world.
World Food Programme has warned that the war in Sudan could lead to the world's largest hunger crisis unless fighting stops. More than 10 months of conflict between rival military forces has left thousands dead and more than 8 million displaced. During a visit to a camp in neighbouring South Sudan, the head of the WFP, Cindy McCain, said the victims of the war had been forgotten.
By the way, I'm not bringing this up in the way that Israel supporters sometimes do when they say, why are you so focused on the crisis in Gaza and not the crises elsewhere? Because all that does confirm is that the crisis in Gaza is exactly as bad, if not worse, as some of the worst crises in the world right now. And yes, we should be focusing on all of them, but that's just how things are. That's how humans are. We focus on what we care about. And apparently what we don't care about is Sudan. So if America could send a few of those food airdrops in another direction, that would be great. Biden will probably think they're going to Gaza or Ukraine anyway. That's it for this week's edition of News Weekly. For those of you who are already supporting the podcast over on patreon.com/samishah, that's S-A-M-I-S-H-H, thank you so much. It takes a lot of work and a lot of research and a lot of time to kind of make this thing, and all the money you give me genuinely helps with the operation costs and the production costs and my own time as well. And I appreciate all the kind words people leave in the reviews on iTunes. If you haven't done that, head over to the Apple Podcast app and leave a 5-star rating and a good review for this podcast. It really helps with all of the metrics and the visibility and all of that nonsense. Otherwise, I'll see you right back here next week on News Weekly, where we punch the news in the headlines. You guessed it, weekly.